gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Flying with Best Fight Picks. I'm your host, Flying Brian. This UFC Berlin edition of the podcast is proudly brought to you by Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of MMA, raising affordable and healthy bulldogs for the last 30 years. Look him up on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 and also on Instagram, Instagram.com/UniqueKennels. I've already had my daily dose of cute, but if you haven't, go there to get that in right now. With me, as always, the best MMA analyst in the entire world, Daniel Levy with MMA Thought and Best Fight Picks. You can find him on the World Wide Web at BestFightPicks.com or on Twitter at MMA Thought and also at Best Fight Picks. Daniel, a lot of gamblers were very happy with UFC 188, yourself included. Can you tell me the plays you made for that card and exactly how they turned out for you?
Hey, Brian. Yeah, it was actually a great event. So our one-unit parlay on Alejandro Perez and Clay Collard, that actually failed to cash. But then we had all the underdogs come through. We had plus 2 units on Yair Rodriguez with that incredible performance, plus 1.55 units on Eddie Alvarez, plus 1.4 units on Cathal Pendred. And then the little parlay we did with Henry Cejudo and Kelvin Gastelum also cashed for 1.21 units. And it would have been more had Tumenov fought, but it's all good. We'll take the win. We finish plus 5.16 units for the event.
I followed you on most of those plays, but like a dummy, I decided to go against Cathal Pendred, which obviously bit me in the ass. I will not make that mistake again, as I will follow you on each and every play that you make this week for UFC Berlin. This card features the first ever title fight on UFC Fight Pass and will be contested between the current women's strawweight champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and the challenger, Jessica Penne. But before we get to that, we've got 10 other fights to break down. This entire fight card will be taking place on UFC Fight Pass and starts at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific time, with a bantamweight fight between Olga Yuta Sasaki and Double Impact Taylor Lapolis. Taylor Lapolis is 9-1 in his professional career, and Olga Sasaki is 18-2 with 2 draws. Currently, the odds have Olga Yuta Sasaki as the favorite at minus 285 and the comeback on Lapolis at 205. Now, Lapolis, most of this guy's wins are by submission. He is very creative with his striking. He looked extremely loose in his UFC debut, which actually was at featherweight, and this fight is at bantamweight. Also, in his UFC debut, he displayed solid takedown defense. One thing that concerns me is at times he gets overconfident and he drops his hands and invites his opponent in, which is entertaining but could bite him in the ass someday. Now, for Sasaki, like his opponent, most of his wins are by submission. He also seems comfortable on the feet. He doesn't have as good a takedown defense as Lapolis, and he has been controlled on the ground. To me, despite this guy having a record of 18 wins with 2 losses, his resume isn't all that impressive. I think Lapolis will have an advantage on the feet. Sasaki will realize this, shoot for takedowns, but he will be unsuccessful. Lapolis will pick Sasaki apart on the feet and either get a clear-cut decision victory or a late stoppage. I am putting Lapolis on my UFC pick'em by KO or TKO in the third. I've also got him on my counter move team. Daniel, how do you see this fight playing out?
You know, when Sasaki first came to the UFC, he was an extremely hyped prospect. And I mean, for good reason. The guy's record at the time was 17-1. So anytime you got a prospect with that kind of record coming into the UFC, you immediately take notice and you want to see what they're capable of. And, you know, he went in there against Roland Delorme and he absolutely owned him. You know, he choked him out within 1 minute and 6 seconds of the first round and got that performance of the night bonus. And everyone was talking about this guy, you know, who's Sasaki? And he comes into his next fight against Leandro Issa, and he was a minus 500 favorite. And I've never seen a bigger contrast between your UFC debut and your sophomore UFC appearance than we saw with Sasaki, because in his first fight, he looked absolutely incredible, like a world beater. Then he comes out there against Leandro Issa, and he looked weak. He was controlled on the ground. He was getting tagged big time on the feet. And then eventually he got tapped out with a neck crank. Now, Leandro Issa is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world champion, and he also trains out of Evolve in Singapore. You know, they produce the champion, Rafael Dos Anjos. So there isn't too much shame in losing to Leandro Issa, but all the hype went out the window, and now we kind of know what to expect from Sasaki. So, you know, his opponent, Taylor Lapolis, he's a French fighter, and, you know, he's a relatively well-rounded guy on the feet. He mixes it up, and, you know, he can defend the takedowns rather well. If he does get taken down, he'll get back up to his feet. And he also looks for submissions here. I would say that Sasaki is the more dangerous submission fighter, just in the sense that he's more opportunistic. Like, for example, if you have him in side control, which is generally seen as a relatively dominant position, you know, he'll attack for a darce choke from side control on bottom. And, you know, it's funny, the only time we've actually seen that completed in the UFC was when Mitch Clark tapped out Ally Aquinta. But we saw Sasaki attempt that in his fight with Leandro Issa. So even if you get a dominant position on Sasaki, he's still really dangerous. However, the thing about Sasaki that you can overcome is that he's not a very physically strong guy. So, you know, Taylor Lapolis, he's going to be the bigger guy here. And as long as he doesn't get caught with some kind of submission, he should be able to grind this one out. So I am going to go with the underdog here, but I kind of want a little bit better of a price before I bet on it. And also, Taylor Lapolis, you know, he's dropping a weight class here. So I'd like to see the weigh-ins and see how they look, but I can't play Sasaki at minus 275. And I would like Lapolis to go at least plus 250 before I do a bet on him. But I'm going to have to say my pick is Taylor Lapolis here. I think as long as he avoids the submission, he can grind this one out.
I agree on that, and like you, I'm going to wait until the weigh-ins, but not to make a play on it, but to maybe possibly put Taylor Lapolis on my countermove team. And of course, like usual, you and I will reveal to the listeners our countermove teams at the end of the show. Next, let's put on 20 pounds and move to the lightweight division for a fight between Poland's Piotr Hallman and Russian Magomed Mustafayev. Piotr Hallman has a professional record of 15 wins with 2 losses, as Mustafayev is 11-1. Hallman hasn't fought since September of 2014 because he tested positive for drostanolone after his split decision loss to Gleison Tibau. He has won 7 fights by KO or TKO and 7 by submission in his professional career, but both of his UFC wins are by submission. This dude has good hands and good head movement. He was actually very successful in the striking game against raging Ally Aquinta. Ally Aquinta did hurt him a few times in that fight, but Hallman showed just how tough he is as he went to a decision with Ally Aquinta, but he did lose. Now, Mustafayev, he is moving down from welterweight. For what it's worth, he is responsible for the lone L on Khabib Nurmagomedov's younger brother's record, and he put that loss there with a spinning back fist. From what I've seen, he gets a little reckless with his submission attempts, possibly because he has such a high-level ground game. I think that the UFC will get another scary Russian lightweight after Mustafayev impresses in his UFC debut. That is, unless he has trouble making weight. If this guy looks fine at weigh-ins, I'll be putting him on my countermove team because he is only $4,200 of a $25,000 salary cap on the countermove. I see him either getting a late stoppage or a dominant decision, and while doing so, he will have a lot of dominant positions and he will land a bunch of strikes. Daniel, what is your take on this fight?
You know, Piotr Hallman, he's one of these guys that he's super gritty. He's a real tough vet. And if you want to beat him, I mean, obviously you can win a decision, but if you really want to beat him, you have to finish this guy because he's going to go in there and he's going to battle you to the bitter end. You know, in his UFC debut against Francisco Masurranduba Trinaldo, he goes in there and he had a very tough first round because, as you know, Masurranduba, he comes out hard every single time for the first round. And Piotr Hallman, he weathered that storm, and then he submitted Francisco Trinaldo with a Kimura in the second round. So he's got a ton of heart. You know, as you mentioned, he fought 3 tough rounds with Ally Aquinta, and he wasn't finished. And Ally Aquinta's been knocking dudes out lately. And then he goes in there against Yves Edwards, and this was a eye-opening performance because, you know, at the time, even though Yves Edwards was at the end of his career, he was still having rather close fights with the guys in his weight class. You know, he was coming off a split decision with Darren Cruikshank, and he's having all these split decision type fights, and then Piotr Hallman just comes out there and absolutely wrecks him. He absolutely destroyed him. It almost seemed like he made him quit, and, you know, he got the third round rear naked choke, and then he gets a step up in competition against Gleison Tibau, and, you know, it was a typical Gleison Tibau fight. The first 2 rounds, Tibau comes out hard, and then the third round, Piotr Hallman showed that heart that I'm talking about, and he definitely won that third round clearly. And he ended up losing the split decision. So, you know, a lot of people could say it could have gone either way. I personally scored it for Tibau, but it just showed the kind of effort that Piotr Hallman's willing to put in a fight to get the result he wants. And He actually did fail his post-fight drug test, so he's been out for almost a full year. And now he's coming in against Magomed Mustafayev. And, you know, Mustafayev, he's another one of these Russian prospects. And if you know what to expect from these Russian prospects, you can expect some serious grappling and some big hands being thrown. You know, when Mustafayev goes in there, he looks to take you down, transition positions, and this guy, he lands some serious ground and pound. You know, one of my favorite aspects about a guy like Islam Makhachev or Khabib Nurmagomedov is the way they get you to the ground. But in my opinion, the most impressive aspect of Mustafayev's game is his ground and pound. He's so lethal when he's on top of you, and he rains down some big, big blows. And, you know, he'll look to submit you too. He's got some very unorthodox submissions in his arsenal, you know, whether it's a heel hook, or more conventional subs such as a triangle choke and an armbar, which, I mean, I say conventional, but it's very hard to pull that off in a mixed martial arts contest. So he's got that Russian warrior spirit, and most likely what's going to happen here is Pyotr Hallman's going to come out slow like he always does, and Mustafayev, he's going to get ahead early on the scorecards. So what's going to really count here is that third round, you know, assuming that no one gets finished up until there. Once it gets to that third round, we got to see how Mustafayev's gas tank is going to hold up, because Pyotr Hallman, like we said, he's one of those guys that he'll keep fighting till the bitter end. And if you start to slow down a little bit, this guy will he'll start to tee off on you a bit. So, you know, while Pyotr Hallman isn't the most technical guy in the world, he does have that heart, he does have that spirit, and he will try to win a fight at all costs, especially if you're starting to slow down a bit. However, I think that Mustafayev's technique is going to be a little bit too much, and he's going to be able to grind out this fight and, you know, take home the decision here. As far as a bet's concerned, you know, right now I'm looking at it and it's plus 100 on Mustafayev. I would like to get a little bit more value than that. So I'm going to wait for the weigh-ins, make sure they make weight, and I'll make my decision then.
So, of course, as usual, we need to follow you on the Twitter at Best Fight Picks to see if you make a play on Magomed Mustafayev after the weigh-ins. Our next fight will take place in the heaviest weight class on this entire card. Middleweights Antonio Jr. Alpha Dos Santos takes on Scott Askam, and they will both be entering the octagon for the second time after having lost their respective UFC debuts. Askam is 12-1 in his professional career, and Antonio Jr. Alpha Dos Santos is 6-2. Currently, the odds have Dos Santos Jr. as a plus 175 underdog, and Scott Askam will assume the role of the favorite at minus 245. Askam, his only loss in his career was a decision defeat in his UFC debut. He is from England, and like most of his countrymen, he does not have very good takedown defense. With that said, he does have a high-level ground game as he owns a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Like Daniel has informed me many of times, because this guy has such high credentials in the ground game, he has a tendency to be comfortable on his back, and he looks for submissions from his back instead of trying to get to his feet. His cardio is on point, he has a very diverse striking attack, and he works his offense well from the clinch. Now for Dos Santos, up until this point in his career, he has won or lost the majority of his fights by KO or TKO. His UFC debut was a loss due to finger injury against Daniel Sarafian. But up until he sustained that injury from Daniel Sarafian, he was looking pretty good. He owns 3 first round knockouts, which all came in less than 2 minutes. This guy looks to finish the fight with every single strike, but at times he seems a little bit reckless. I think that if Askam can avoid the big shots from Dos Santos early, he will use his range and more rounded skill set to grind out a decision. One thing that I want to add is that Askam might not need the takedown defense in this fight, because I don't think that Dos Santos is really going to look for a takedown. On UFC Pick'em, I have Askam by decision. But what do you think of this fight, Daniel?
You know, Scott Askam, he's a very highly touted British prospect. And, you know, he goes in there and he looks to knock your head off. More than half of his wins are via KO. And, you know, he'll mix it up, whether he knocks you out with his hands or with a head kick. And, you know, even if you get on the ground, you're not safe there too, unless you're in the top position grinding him out, as Magnus Sedenblad did in Askam's UFC debut. But, you know, if you recall that fight, Askam actually dropped Sedenblad with a front kick to the face in the second round. But I'm not sure if he showed poor fight IQ not finishing the job, or, you know, it was his UFC debut, so maybe the jitters got to him a little bit. I just really expect a much better performance from him this time. as you mentioned, he was a little content to lay on his back in his UFC debut, but you know, you got to think that he's addressed those issues and that he's working diligently to get up off his back and to address those problems that he had. But, you know, his cardio was on point, his striking is on point, and he tries to win the fight. Now, as far as his opponent, Antonio Dos Santos, you know, this guy, he's a little short, stocky pit bull for his weight class, and he goes in there and he throws big, big looping punches. You know, in his UFC debut against Daniel Sarafian, he dropped Sarafian in the first round, and, you know, unfortunately he couldn't get the finish, but he was teeing off on Daniel Sarafian, and then in the second round, he went to block a punch, and his pinky actually got dislocated, and he asked the ref for a timeout so the ref could pop it back in. You know, and the ref, he declined, of course, and called off the fight because you can't be calling for timeouts in the middle of your fight. So, you know, in some sense, I think both of these guys kind of lack a little bit of fight IQ, but I do think that Scott Askam is the better overall fighter. So what I think is going to happen is he's going to establish his range. He's going to pick him apart. He's going to hopefully, for his sake, avoid the big looping punches, potentially stuff the takedowns. And I think Scott Askam can knock out Antonio Dos Santos. So my pick is Scott Askam. As far as the play is concerned, I do think that minus 230 on Askam is a little bit much to ask for. And for me personally, I'm not going to put him on any parlays because I don't see anything worthwhile parlaying on this card. I mean, you could say maybe Scott Askam and the champion Joanna, but you know, that's like it's like minus 150 or something like that. And I'd be looking for plus money or a little bit more value if I wanted to parlay it. So if you want to parlay it, go for it. But for me personally, I'm passing on a bet. But my pick is Scott Askam.
I also decided to go with Askam on my countermove team. But let's cruise on over to Conor McGregor's division for a fight between Nicholas Backstrom and Neo Noad Lahat. Lahat is currently 8-1 in his professional career, and also Nicholas Backstrom is 8-1, but he also has one no contest. Currently, Nicholas Backstrom is minus 225 with the comeback on Neo Noad at plus 175. Backstrom, this means nothing, but Dan Hardy refers to him as the lunatic. I am somewhat baffled that this guy can make 145 pounds because he is 6'1" tall and has a 74-inch reach. He's got a 5-inch reach advantage over his opponent, Lahat. He uses his reach very well, and he throws a wide variety of kicks and does so in abundance. Three fights ago, he threw a front kick as the very first move of the fight, and that move ended the fight. His length also allows him to get interesting angles on submissions. One thing that could be a problem for him is that he does not have very good takedown defense. However, he is pretty proficient at getting back to his feet once he is on his back or looking for submissions while he is defending the takedowns. Now, for his opponent, Neo Noad, he's got a second degree black belt in judo. He's also got a regular black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. No big deal, right? Just a regular black belt. This doesn't mean anything for this fight, but he's only the second fighter native of Israel to compete in the UFC. This dude is very strong and uses good head movement. He does not stay in one place for very long. With that said, he is very hittable. Godofredo Pepe knocked him out with a flying knee, and Super Steven Sire did some good work on the feet against him, but was unable to defend the judo takedowns of Lahat. The thing that I think about this fight is I think Backstrom will use his length and diverse striking attack to keep Lahat at a distance. If he is unable to defend Lahat's takedowns, I think he will either be able to reverse the position or get back to his feet. I'm thinking Backstrom either wins by TKO from a front kick. I just think he wins by TKO or he's going to win a close decision. What do you think, Daniel?
You know, Nicholas Backstrom, he's extremely hyped as well. And, you know, in his UFC debut, he goes in there against Tom Ninamaki and he was getting taken down at will. And, you know, he was getting positions advanced on him and he was looking really, really bad. But he capitalized on one little opening and tapped out Ninamaki. And as we've seen in Ninamaki's UFC fights, if you grab his neck for a second, the guy will tap right away. He doesn't have much heart at all. So at the time, it was a super impressive submission, but you go back and watch it, and Backstrom was looking terrible up until that point, and then you consider how Ninamaki has looked since then, and it's just really not as impressive as everyone says, in my opinion. And then Backstrom comes out in his next fight, and he's a minus 700 favorite against Mike Wilkinson. And, you know, he starts off doing his thing. He throws those front kicks to the face. He's his real long-rangey strikes, and Then he got knocked out viciously, and it was honestly one of the scariest knockouts I've ever seen, because I feel like Nicholas Backstrom, he's kind of a little bit too skinny for 145 pounds. He's so tall. He cuts so much weight. I feel like the guy should move up a weight class. And the way he fell from that knockout, it was brutal. It was scary. You just kind of don't ever want to see something like that again. And for me personally, like I just said, I really thought that Nicholas Backstrom should consider moving up a weight class. So pretty much what he looks to do is, you know, throw those front kicks to the face, use that jab, you know, throw a little knee here and there, tie clinch you, and try to knock you out and try to find an unorthodox submission. He's definitely a finisher. The thing is that his takedown defense is terrible, and getting brutally knocked out like he did in his last fight, that's not doing any favors for his chin. Now, as far as Noad Lahat's concerned, this guy's got a ton of heart, because not just in the ring, but outside of the ring. I mean, the guy, he's in the Israeli army. He's fighting terrorists when he's not when he's not fighting in the ring. So, I mean, the guy's heart is through the roof. And, you know, I'm an American citizen, so I support all our allies. And, you know, Noad Lahat, he's a bad dude. And he actually trains out of AKA, so he's getting really good sparring in with Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's got Daniel Cormier as his wrestling coach. So, you know, the guy's getting better every single day. And he goes in there in his UFC debut against Godofredo Pepe, who, let me say, Godofredo Pepe has been looking better than ever. I mean, you remember he knocks out Noad Lahat with that flying knee, and then he submits Deshaun Johnson with that the Poirier submission, and then he goes in there against Andre Feely, and he taps him out too. So Godofredo Pepe is on a career resurgence. But back to that fight, you know, Noad Lahat, he comes out there and he's showing off his footwork a little bit and landing a couple shots on Pepe. But, you know, Pepe beat him fair and square with that flying knee and knocked him out cold. So then Noad Lahat, he returns on his sophomore UFC appearance. And he goes out there against Steven Seiler. And, you know, the first round, he was able to get that judo throw and keep that top position. And then the second round, that's when we really got to see what his game's all about. You know, he took Steven Seiler's back and then immediately transitioned to a triangle and then got the mounted triangle. And the bell actually saved Steven Seiler, because it looked like Noad Lahat was about to tap him out with a mounted triangle. So the guy's ground game is ridiculous. And I guess by the third round, he was a little tired and Steven Seiler was able to take his back. And, you know, credit to Lahat. He didn't get tapped out. He got back up and, you know, kept fighting. But he lost the third round. He ends up winning the fight 29-28. Now he gets this, I don't know if I want to call it a step up, but, you know, he's matched up against another 8-1 prospect in Nicholas Backstrom. And it's going to be interesting because, you know, Backstrom, he is the taller guy. He is the rangier guy. And, you know, if Backstrom lands one of those big knees or big front kicks, he can for sure knock out Lahat. But you can't bank on a guy just landing that one strike. And what I think is going to happen is that Lahat's going to be able to exploit Backstrom's very bad takedown defense. And I think he's either going to grind him out or potentially submit him. So I do want to bet on Noad Lahat here. You know, he's around plus 185. Just want to make sure that they both – well, I don't care if Backstrom makes weight, but I want to make sure that Lahat makes weight and that he's looking good. So I'm going to go with the underdog here.
Once again, we'll stay tuned to you on Twitter at Best Fight Picks to see if you make that play on Lahat after the weigh-ins. We will stay in what is actually currently Jose Aldo's weight class for a fight between Alan Omer and almighty Arnold Allen. Omer is currently 18-4 in his professional career, and Arnold Allen is 9-1 in his professional career. The current odds have it at Omer is minus 210 and Allen is plus 160. Almighty Arnold Allen is taking this fight on just 5 days short notice. He is a very young guy, just 21 years of age. He was a boxer and he started training in other martial arts, and he has since got a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under Gracie Barra. Omer has fast hands. With the help of those hands, he has accumulated 12 first round finishes. The majority of those, though, are by submission. He also has a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. In this fight, I think Arnold Allen will look to engage with big punches just moments into the fight, but will be unsuccessful in reaching Omer's chin and will gas his arms out. Omer will get the better of him on the feet and finish the fight with a submission late in the first or midway through the second round. How do you see this fight going, Daniel?
You know, Alan Omer, he's already got an 18-4 record. So, I mean, you can foreseeably say that the guy's a veteran. And it's interesting because he's actually a prospect with an 18-4 record. And the guy's from Iraq. So you don't have too many Iraqi prospects. So it's pretty cool. And he goes in there in his UFC debut against Jim Ehlers. And, you know, that was a very close fight. It could have gone either way. Ehlers definitely got the better of the grappling exchanges. But Omer got the better of the stand-up exchanges, and Omer actually dropped Ehlers. And, you know, a lot of people thought that Alan Omer won that fight. Now, one issue with Omer is that he's a bit inactive. You know, he fought in 2010, and then he fought twice in 2011, and then he didn't fight again until 2014. So the last time he actually fought was April 2014. So he's coming off a serious layoff here. But the thing with his opponent, Arnold Allen, is that this guy's actually taking the fight on 1 week short notice. So you don't know if he's had the adequate amount of time to prepare. But the thing with Arnold Allen is he's only 21 years old. He's already had 10 pro fights. So he's one of these new breed kids, and he's real good. You know, he'll use his long range strikes, and then he'll close the distance. He'll trip you. He'll get you down to the ground, land some nice ground and pound, and, you know, try to tap you out or get that decision. So Arnold Allen, he's definitely a bright prospect, but I think that Alan Omer, he's going to be able to show his veteran experience here. You know, in the one fight that Arnold Allen lost to Marcin Rozek, basically what happened was it was the typical case of a young fighter getting outclassed. You know, he just he didn't look terrible, but he was just slightly worse in every single area of the game. So I think this fight has the potential of going the same way where, you know, Omer, he's just going to be a little bit more experienced, a little bit more crafty, and I think he's going to be able to edge out the fight here. So I got Alan Omer.
I'm going with that as well. I'm going to put Alan Omer on my UFC pick'em with, like I said, either a first or a second round finish. Our next fight takes place in the lightweight division between a couple of bad dudes. Alon Patrick takes on Mirbak Taisumov. Taisumov has a professional record of 23 wins with 5 losses, and Alon Patrick is a perfect 12-0. Taisumov will have the betting odds on his side, kind of. He's minus 170 and the comeback on Patrick at plus 140. Taisumov is extremely well-rounded, but he's known for his striking. He has more finishes than Alon Patrick has fights. I'm not sure if his last opponent, Christo Dulu, deserved to be in the octagon with him, but whatever. He was able to get the finish in the second round of that fight. He looks to put on constant pressure style like the former heavyweight champion Cain Velasquez, and he will utilize a similar game plan against Patrick. Now, Patrick has a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. His favorite grappling technique he listed as the flying triangle. If he hits that, I'm going to be absolutely flabbergasted. But he does train with Jacare Souza. His last fight was against John McDessie, who everyone knows is very good at striking and also has a decent chin. And he got the better of McDessie on the feet from time to time, Patrick did. But basically, Patrick beat McDessie with his grappling, which he will try to do against Taisumov as well. This fight is very close and difficult for me to choose a winner, but I'm going to go with Taisumov. I think that he will be a little bit better on the feet, and the grappling will kind of negate each other. I think that he'll be able to keep the fight standing, and Taisumov will get a decision by staying on the feet and getting the better of Patrick with his stand-up game. What do you think, Daniel?
You know, Mirbak Taisumov, he's a real badass, and this guy, he trains out of Tiger Muay Thai, and he's getting better every single fight. You know, his record is 23-5, but he still continues to make improvements fight by fight. And, you know, in his UFC debut against Taihyun Bang, he pretty much got the better of Bang everywhere in that fight, whether it was the ground, the feet, just everywhere. It was a really well-rounded performance. Then he goes in there against Michel Prezeris, and, you know, he kind of got exposed a little bit. You know, Prezeris was able to drag him down to the ground constantly, and, you know, interestingly enough, he got a 30-25 decision against Taisumov because Taisumov kept grabbing the fence, and so he got points deducted. But had it not been a 30-25, it would have been a 30-27. So, I mean, he lost that fight fair and square. And then he rebounds against Marcin Bandel, and, you know, he just destroyed Marcin Bandel. He just goes in there and knocks him out. And then his next fight against Anthony Christodoulou, he did the same thing. He just goes in there and knocks him out too. But the thing with Christodoulou and Bandel is that you know, both these guys, they're not UFC caliber fighters, and they didn't put up much of a fight against Mirbek Taisimov, so it really allowed him the opportunity to show off his skill set. Now that he's going in there against Alan Patrick, it's going to be a real fight, because Patrick, he's a very tough guy, and he's got a very interesting skill set. You know, as you mentioned, he is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and he does go for unorthodox submissions, such as a flying triangle, but on the feet, he's really unorthodox too. He has a wide variety of capoeira techniques, and you know, he'll throw those spinning heel kicks and even a cartwheel kick and stuff like that, and he goes in there in his UFC debut, he knocks out Garrett Whiteley, and then he gets the step up against John McDessie, and a lot of people thought he lost the McDessie fight, but I think you should consider rewatching that fight on mute, and just don't be swayed by the commentary, because you know, Rogan and Goldberg, they were very high on John McDessie in that fight, and they were kind of ignoring what Patrick was doing, and Patrick was actually looking really good in that fight. He was mixing it up, you know, he'd throw those wild techniques on the feet, transition to the takedowns, and just showed off his all-around game. To me, this is a pick'em fight, so when I see plus 145 on Alan Patrick, I gotta go with the underdog here. I think, you know, assuming he makes weight and he looks good, I think he's gonna win this fight. I think that he's gonna, you know, on the feet, Taisimov is super dangerous, but Alan Patrick's going to be able to mix it up, and he's going to be able to get this fight to the ground where he wants it and negate that striking game of Taisimov. So I see Alan Patrick getting the decision here, and assuming he looks good at the weigh-ins, I would like to put one unit on the underdog.
So we were kind of opposite in our analysis there, but you're the better one of us, so I'm going to go with you on that. I'll put Patrick on my UFC pick'em, and if you put a unit on it, I'll follow you with that. You just let us know on the Twitter, of course. The next fight will take place in the featherweight division between Mr. Finland, Makwan Amerikani, and Masio Lobo Fulin. Fulin is 10-4 in his professional career, and Mr. Finland is 11-2. Currently, the odds have Mr. Finland minus 240 and Fulin at plus 180. Now, Fulin, you're probably going to recognize this guy from blockbuster films such as Transformers and Disturbia. Okay, obviously that isn't true, but at first glance, to me, this guy kind of looks like Shia LaBeouf. This dude is boxing-oriented, as he is a former professional boxer. He was a Taekwondo national champion, and that's the style he uses for his stance. I haven't seen a terrible amount of success for this guy with his grappling. He is very hittable and was rocked early and often in his UFC debut. Now, Amerikani, let me just start by saying this guy is going to win this fight. But I almost want to cheer against him because he's going to walk out to the most overplayed song in combat sports history, The Eye of the Tiger. His UFC debut lasted only 8 seconds, so there's not much I can tell from that fight. But in those 8 seconds, he did not get to show his strength, which is wrestling. He was a Finnish national champion in two different styles of wrestling. The majority of his wins are by submission. Amerikani is extremely cheap on counter moves, so you need to put this guy on your team. I think he will hang with Fulin in the striking department long enough to get a takedown, followed by a submission. What are your MMA thoughts, Daniel?
You know, Makwan Amerikani, he goes in there against Andy Ogle, and he knocks him out in 8 seconds. It was almost like Jose Aldo versus Cub Swanson with a couple extra follow-up punches. And it's interesting because that's the only KO on Makwan Amirkani's record. So a lot of people are acting like he's this big KO artist, but he's never knocked anyone out in his entire career until that fight. And the guy's 11-2. He's a good prospect, but what he actually looks to do is use his wrestling and his submission game. His stand-up is actually rather green. He really doesn't have much stand-up. And when he gets you to the ground, you know, if you know what you're doing on the ground, you can reverse him and get on top, because the guy will give up positions easily. So I really think that he's super overhyped here. Now, one thing you got to know is that he moved his training camp over to the All-Stars gym. So now he's training with Alexander Gustafsson and Ilir Latifi and all those guys. So I do expect him to get better in this performance, because he has stepped up his training a little bit. And he's taken on Masio Fulin. And, you know, Fulin, he's one of these guys that was on Tough Latino America. And he made it to the semifinals, but he got knocked out with a head kick by Leandro Morales. And he was actually looking good up until that point, but he did get knocked out. And then he goes in there in his UFC debut against Torres, and you know, he got dropped twice in the first round, but he showed major heart because he was able to come back and win the second and third round. So here's the thing. if you rock this guy, you can for sure put him out, because Maciel Fulon, he doesn't have the best chin in the world, but what he does have is some serious heart and composure, because after he got rocked in that fight, you know, he got back up and he stuffs the takedowns, and then he starts getting off on some strikes of his own, and he actually does have some pretty solid hands. So this is the interesting thing about this fight, because it's kind of like a lot of unknown variables at hand here. It could almost go a variety of ways. You know, you could have Amir Khani do that entrance he did against Andy Ogle and just, you know, blitz Maciel Fulon and rock him and put him out cold. Or he's going to try to do what he does in all his fights, which is establish that wrestling. And if Maciel Fulon is able to stuff the takedowns and keep it standing, he should get the better of the exchanges on the feet. It's just worrisome because his chin is very questionable. And, you know, Amir Khani on the ground, like we mentioned, he hasn't been fighting the best guys. And against the low-level competition he's been fighting, he hasn't made it look easy at all, man. Like I said, he gives up position. He'll give up that, you know, that top control and go to his back. And he'll go for subs that aren't quite locked in and then flop to his back. So Amir Khani, he's super overhyped here. You can't lay minus 240 on Amir Khani. I personally consider this a dog or pass situation, but I'm not entirely convinced I'm even going to take a shot on the dog here. I think I might just pass and enjoy this fight, but, you know, we'll see. If Amir Khani misses weight or something like that, maybe I will take that shot on the dog, but it's a real toss-up. I see some serious paths to victory for both, and I'm not convinced on either enough to make a bet here. But I'll probably just go on the opposite of you, and I'll say Maciel Fulon gets the win here.
All right, you're probably right. He might not be worth minus 240 for an actual play with units, but for counter move, he's 4,200 on the counter move. I think that I'm definitely going with him. That's going to open up other possibilities for me on my counter move team, and I do think he'll get a finish, but you're always right. But here we go on to the main card portion of this fight card for a fight between Sergeant Nick Hine and Lucas Wookie Sadowski. This is a lightweight fight, and Nick Hine has a professional record of 11 wins, 2 losses, and 1 no contest. Wookie Sadowski is 13-0 in his professional career, and Wookie Sadowski will be the underdog at plus 145, and Hine assumes the favorite position at minus 165. Hine has a black belt in judo. He's very physically strong. Here's a little fun fact. His last win was over his brother-in-law, Drew Dober. Now, Sadowski has a blue belt in BJJ, which almost is meaningless, but he does have a blue belt in BJJ. He is mainly a wrestler and a boxer. 9 of his 13 wins were finishes. He hasn't faced quite the level of competition that Nick Hine was going to bring to the table. I don't think that Sadowski will be able to deal with the judo techniques that Hine is going to bring to the table. I think that Hine will either grind out a decision or finish Sadowski with late ground and pound. What do you think, Daniel?
You know, it's funny. I'm going to touch on what you mentioned. So Nick Hine, he goes in there and beats Drew Dober, and then Drew Dober marries Nick Hine's sister. So, you know, I kind of thought it should be the opposite. But, yeah, it's kind of funny, man. And, you know, Nick Hine, he does have that strong judo background that you're talking about, and he's a real physically imposing guy. You know, he's kind of short for the weight class, but he's real stocky, real muscular, and he'll get in your face. He'll throw big looping punches, and, you know, if he gets a hold of you, he's putting you down on the ground. In his 2 UFC fights, you know, against Drew Dober, that was a very closely contested fight, and a lot of people thought that could have gone either way, and he actually happened to get the win. And then he goes in there against James Vick, and he drops James Vick twice in the first round, and somehow manages to lose the last 2 rounds and lose that fight. And, you know, that's another one of those fights that a lot of people thought could have gone either way. You know, I personally thought both the fights were scored correctly. I had the first one for Hine and the second one for Vic. But, you know, it is what it is. The judges got it right. And now he's coming in there against Lucas Sadowski, and he's going to look to do the same thing he always does, which is get in your face, throw big punches, drag you to the ground, beat you up there, grind out that decision. My issue with Nick Hine is that I'm not sure how focused he is. You know, he's 32 years old. He's a sergeant. You know, the name Sergeant Nick Hine isn't a cute nickname. He literally is a sergeant. So I'm curious if he's distracted at all, if he's going to, you know, be 100%. Because when you talk about Lucas Sadowski, I mean, this kid's only 24 years old, and he's 13-0. And interestingly enough, like, his best area is the ground game, so he's going to be able to negate that judo game of Nick Hine. And, you know, what Lucas Sadowski looks to do is on the feet, he's actually pretty technical as well. You know, he'll throw big leg kicks and big looping punches. He does have some nice head movement. He'll parry your punches real well. And once this guy's on top of you, he has problems to deal with because he's constantly transitioning positions. He's attacking your arm, whether it's with a Kimura, with an armbar. You're always looking out for yourself when this guy's on top of you. But the way he sets up his takedowns is real nice too, because he'll close that distance and get his arms around both your legs and clasp on that double leg and take you for a ride. And he'll do it consistently. He's got a very good gas tank. My biggest concern with Lucas Sajewski is that he hasn't fought since May 2014. So, I mean, that is quite the layoff. You know, Nick Hine, he hasn't fought since November 2014, but that's a little bit more recent than Sajewski. But as far as how they match up, I think that they're very similar, but I think Sajewski is going to be a little bit better on the ground, and he's going to be good enough on the feet not to get hurt there. And, you know, since he is only 24 years old, I expect him to look even better than he looked in his last fight, whereas we already know what to expect from Nick Hine. He's kind of peaked out. He's a solid fighter, straight up. He's a really good fighter. But Lucas Sajewski, you know, he's a young kid. He's getting better every single time out. And, you know, assuming he had a good training camp here, I got to go with Lucas Sajewski for the upset here. So, you know, assuming he doesn't miss weight and that he looks good, I'm going to put one unit on Lucas Sajewski.
Opposite of me once again, but I said at the beginning of the show that I'm going to follow you on each and every unit that you put on this fight card, because I'm not making that mistake again where I went against you and I went against the GOAT, Cathal Pendred. So yeah, I'll follow you on that one unit on Lucas Sajewski if you make it, and then if I do that, I'll also put him on my UFC Pick'em as a decision because I don't want to be opposite on any of my plays. But let's move on for a welterweight contest between Peter Sabata and Steamhola Stephen Kennedy. Kennedy is 22-6 in his professional career, and Sabata is 14 wins, 4 losses, and 1 draw. The current odds have Sabata at minus 250, so he's the second biggest favorite on this card, with the comeback on Stephen Kennedy at plus 210. Now, you might think that I pronounced Kennedy's nickname wrong, but his nickname is actually pronounced Steamhola because his BJJ coach is very Portuguese, and that's who gave him the nickname. And as you know, in Portuguese, R's are pronounced like H's. This dude is filling in for Sergio Moraes on just 11 days' notice. As I mentioned, his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach, this guy is a finisher who has 12 first-round finishes to his name, most of which are by submission. He also has good boxing, and his favorite striking technique is his jab. Sabata is currently in his second stint with the world's premier MMA promotion. Back in 2009 to 2010, he lost 3 consecutive with the UFC and was cut, but he fought his way back and has since notched his first UFC victory. He will have a 4-inch reach advantage over Kennedy. He is also a submission specialist, but he is also very crisp on his feet. He stands southpaw, which will actually allow both men to throw the power leg body kick really easily, but I think Sabata will have the edge with those. Sabata only has 1 decision victory to his name thus far, but I think in this fight he will make it 2. I'm putting Sabata on my UFC Pick'em as a decision. Daniel, there really is a possibility of a live dog in this fight. What are your thoughts?
You know, Peter Sabata, he's one of these guys that when he had his first UFC stint, he just wasn't ready at the time. And, you know, he lost 3 in a row, like you mentioned. He got cut. And, you know, he really found himself ever since he left the UFC. He went on to win, you know, 6 straight fights. But 3 of those fights actually happened on the same night, interestingly enough. So the guy's super tough. And, you know, he does have a striking background. And basically what he looks to do is, you know, a little bit of volume striking on the feet, and, you know, he'll transition to his takedowns, and he does have some solid jiu-jitsu. So once he gets you down on the ground, you know, he will look to attack. He won 5 straight fights via rear naked chokes. I mean, you know, the guy, if he looks to take your back, he's going to look to get those hooks in and, you know, sink in that choke. So Peter Sabata, he's a solid guy. Now, as far as his opponent, Stephen Kennedy, is concerned, He's kind of one of these journeyman guys, and he got this call on 1 week's short notice. Now, he has won 10 of his last 11 fights, so, I mean, that's got to count for something. But the way he fights is basically on the feet. you know, he's kind of opportunistic. He keeps his hands a little low. He'll eat some shots, but if you leave a little opening, you know, he'll throw a big left hook in there or throw a big leg kick. And when this guy gets you on the ground, you know, he's a little sloppy there too. But against the level of competition he's been facing, he's been able to make it work. And, you know, he's actually won nine of his fights via submission and eight of them by KO. So he does mix it up a little bit, but the guy is best on the ground. And, you know, if he gets on top of you and, you know, he starts going for that Kimura, you better watch out. As far as this matchup is concerned, I do think that Peter Sabata, he's just a tiny bit better everywhere than Steve Kennedy. So, you know, I'm not sure if it's going to be a first-round submission or a decision, but I just see Peter Sabata being better. And interestingly enough, Sabata was getting ready to fight Serginho Moraes, who's, you know, one of the best jiu-jitsu guys in the entire UFC, let alone in the world. And, you know, Steve Kennedy is not one of the best jiu-jitsu guys in the UFC or in the world. Now, this is a fight. It's not a jiu-jitsu match. But I just think that, you know, Steve Kennedy is definitely a step down in all areas from Sergio Moraes. And, you know, Peter Sabata, he has had a full training camp, whereas Steve Kennedy is taking this fight on extremely short notice. So, you know, I do like to go for underdogs, but in this case, I got to go with the favorite. So I think Peter Sabata is going to get it done.
We're really not on the same page today. I was thinking you might take a stab on the dog there. Plus 210 is kind of intriguing money, but as we talked about last week, there is zero value in a guy who can't win. Now, that is not the case in this one. You do see avenues to victory for both fighters, but you're not going to take it.
Yeah, I mean, not only is Sabata better than Kennedy everywhere, but he's also had a longer training camp, and he's training to fight a way tougher guy. And they're just trying to find a guy for Sabata to beat in Germany because Sabata is the German. I mean, you know, hometown advantage to me, it doesn't really mean much because all it takes is one punch, one choke, one kick. But I do think Peter Sabata has the edge everywhere. As far as betting is concerned, I can't bet on Peter Sabata at minus 250. He's not a minus 250 kind of guy. But I do have to pick him for the win over Stephen Kennedy.
So on UFC Pick'em, if you get the correct fighter and the correct method, KO, TKO, submission, or decision, you get 200 points for the winner. You get 75 points for the correct method. But if you pick round three and it goes to a decision, you still get 50 points instead of the 75. So I've got Sabata on my counter move team with a submission in the third round just to cover both bases, possibly 75 points for the sub, possibly 50 points if it goes to a decision. But we're going to move on to the co-main event of the evening. It features two featherweights that are very densely muscled. Dennis Seaver looks to rebound against Tatsuya the Crusher Kawajiri. Kawajiri's professional record is extensive. He has 33 wins, 8 losses, and 2 draws. Seaver is 22-10 with one no contest. That one no contest was, of course, due to PEDs, or performance-enhancing drugs. Currently, Seaver is minus 170 with the comeback on Kawajiri at plus 150. Seaver, he lost his last fight to Conor McGregor. He did look better than most people thought he would, but he did lose in the second round. Conor McGregor said he was going to win in 2 minutes, unsuccessful, so maybe that was a win right there for Dennis Seaver. No, I'm just kidding. Nearly two decades ago, he was a German kickboxing champion. He loves throwing spinning shit, spinning kicks to the body, spinning back fist, all kinds of spinning shit. He throws punches with very heavy hands every single time he's looking for the kill. He is also no slouch on the ground as he holds a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He has used that Jiu-Jitsu skills to allot 9 of his wins by submission. Kawajiri, he is also coming into this fight on a loss. His last fight was against Clay Guida back in April of 2014, and he lost a decision, of course. That's what Clay Guida does. Now, again, I've said this many times. Fightnomics says that people who have sat out for 12 or more months only win 35% of the time. So I think that's going to go against Kawajiri right there. Kawajiri is very creative with his striking, but he prefers to get the fight to the ground and implement ground and pound. In his fight against Clay Guida, he was dropped early, and we all know that that is not what Clay Guida is known for. The Carpenter does not knock people out, and he knocked Kawajiri down early. I think that Dennis Seaver is going to find a way to get to Kawajiri's chin, and he's going to end this fight in the third round. Daniel, enlighten us.
You know, this is a classic striker versus grappler matchup. And, you know, Kawajiri, he has won 6 of his last 7 fights. But, you know, in his UFC debut, he goes in there against Sean Soriano, and he was getting lit up. And he got lucky that Sean Soriano got a little tired there in the second round because he was able to take his back and choke him out cold. But the problem with Kawajiri is that he doesn't set up his takedowns at all. He'll literally just dive in. Like, he'll kind of run at you and dive in with his head first. And, you know, if you got even a little bit of takedown defense and a little bit of a gas tank, you can avoid it for sure and light the guy up. And, you know, Dennis Seaver, he's definitely a bona fide veteran of the sport at this time. He's had so many fights. And, you know, it's interesting. He's well known for that spinning back kick. And he did put out two guys in the past with it, you know, Paul Kelly and Nate Moore. And, man, he destroyed Paul Kelly with that spinning back kick. I'll never forget it because – so he kicks Paul Kelly with the spinning back kick, and he breaks his rib, and Kelly goes down, and the ref doesn't stop it. So the ref lets Paul Kelly, who has a broken rib, he's hunched over it, he lets him get up, and then Seaver just starts teeing off on him, and the ref still doesn't stop it. Eventually, you know, it was stopped, but, man, it was a late stoppage, and – you know, that's when you really got to see the kind of striking that Seaver's capable of. You know, if you get close to Seaver, he'll fire off a four-punch combination. He's got some very big left hooks, right hooks, and head kicks. He pretty much has the full striking arsenal. The issue is when he steps up in competition, that's when he starts to get exposed a little bit. But luckily for him, this fight isn't a step up in competition at all. And I think he should handle this rather easily. I think what's going to happen is that Kawajiri is going to try to, you know, dive in for one of those sloppy takedowns. Dennis Seaver is going to be able to avoid it. He's going to light him up on the feet. And whether he gets a TKO or not, I don't know. But I do think that Dennis Seaver is going to light up Tatsuya Kawajiri. So I got Dennis Seaver for the victory here. I'm not betting on it because, you know, I'm not about to lay minus 170 on a guy who's on his way out. And I'm not about to take an underdog shot on Kawajiri because I think he's going to lose. So I'm passing on this fight, but my pick is Dennis Seaver for the win.
Dennis Seaver for the win might be worth a lot of value on your counter move team as he is only worth $4,800 of a $25,000 bet. Finally, we have made our way to the main event of the evening. The first ever title fight on UFC Fight Pass is between Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who will look to keep a perfect record and be the first person to ever defend the UFC Women's Strawweight Championship when she takes on the ultra-violent Jessica Penney. Champ JJ is primarily a striker, and against Carla Esparza, she showed just how great her takedown defense is. Penney loves to keep the fight on the ground and then implement some ground and pound and also some submissions. But I don't think that Champ JJ lets this fight get to the ground. I think that she will add to her already impressive amount of strikes thrown in the UFC, and she will get a mid-fight TKO. Now, just a little bit ago, Fightnomics Reed tweeted out that so far in Champ JJ's career, she has thrown 323 strikes from a distance, and her three UFC opponents have only returned about one-third of those. I think that this fight is going to be similar to that. Currently, Champ JJ has a professional record of 9 wins, 0 losses. Penney is 12-3. The odds, obviously, Joanna Jędrzejczyk is the biggest favorite on this card at minus 700. Penney is plus 500. I've got Champ JJ on my counter move team, as I think that everyone should, because I think she gets a finish and I think she lands about 3 million punches. Daniel, what do you got on this fight?
You know, Jessica Penne, she's actually the former Invicta Atomweight Championship. And for those that don't know, that's one weight class down from strawweight, which is where this fight's going to be contested at. And, you know, Jessica Penne, she's a really good grappler. She'll get you on the ground and, you know, she'll cycle through her submission attempts. And she's really good with her positioning. And, you know, on the feet, she's more of a meat and potatoes kind of striker. You know, she uses her jab and her straight punches, and that's about it. She has a really good counter jab, and she circles really well. Nothing special on the feet, but solid enough to get the fight where she wants it. And like I said, on the ground, she's very opportunistic. If you give her your neck, she will choke you out for sure. Now, the thing with Joanna Jędrzejczyk, the champion, is this girl's an absolute killer. You know, in her UFC debut against Juliana Lima, she was able to show off her striking because she is a 6-time Muay Thai champion. But, you know, she was in some hairy spots in that fight. And, you know, Lima missed weight, so you could say, oh, maybe the bigger woman was able to overpower her. But let's not make excuses. Joanna Jędrzejczyk still went in there and won that fight on all three scorecards. Then she goes in there against Claudia Gadelha, who, you know, at the time was the consensus number one contender. You know, Gadelha trains out of Novo Inia with Jose Aldo, Henan Barao, and all those studs. And, Gadelha is one of the most dangerous fighters in that weight class. And, you know, she was able to take down Joanna like 7 times in that fight. But Joanna showed some big improvements because she actually dropped Claudia Gadelha twice in that fight. And, you know, she won the decision there too. Then she gets her title shot against the former champion, Carla Esparza, who's a way better wrestler than both Gadelha and Juliana Lima. And, you know, for the first 30 seconds, I think she got taken out one time, but she immediately got back up, which was a big improvement in her game. You know, she's always been able to get back up, but the way she did it this time, it was so quick, so effective, and you could tell that that's really what she put her focus on during that training camp. So she gets back up, and, you know, she doesn't get taken down again, and she just starts taking Carla Esparza to school. I mean, you know, I've personally never been that impressed with Carla Esparza, but I mean, she was the UFC champ, right? So you got to give her credit where credit's due, and she's got quite the resume on her. And Joanna basically made Carla look like she's never taken a single striking class in her entire life. She just destroyed her. She owned her. She embarrassed her. She dethroned her. You know, she absolutely murdered her. And, you know, in terms of this fight with Jessica Penne, I think that, yeah, Joanna probably could be in some rough spots early, but eventually she's going to be able to get the fight where she wants it, which is on the feet. And she's light years ahead of Penne on the feet. Yeah, Penne does have that good jab, but Joanna's got a good jab. She's got a good cross. She's got a good left hook, good overhand right, good leg kick, good head kick, good flying knee, good elbow. That's what I can't count, but that's around 10 techniques. And I only named one stand-up technique for Jessica Penne because it really is a 10-1 arsenal kind of fight. So what I think is going to happen, like I said, is that, you know, the first couple minutes might be a little close, but after that, Joanna's going to find her range and she's going to start teeing off on Jessica Penne and eventually get that TKO. So while I can't bet on Joanna Jędrzejczyk at minus 700, minus 800, I was looking at the under 2.5 rounds at plus 150. I think there's definitely some value in that. You know, I don't like to play unders too much because, you know, this sport is so unpredictable that picking a winner is tough enough, but I do think there's some value in that because if Penne isn't able to get the fight to the ground, she's definitely not winning the stand-up exchanges. And, you know, Joanna is getting more and more confident in every single fight, and she's putting her combinations better together. And I just think that this is going to be one of those breakthrough performances where she really shows how dominant of a champion she is. So I see her getting the finish here. And, yeah, I'd put Joanna on my counter move team as well, but I am eyeing the under 2.5 rounds. And, you know, just stay tuned to Best Fight Picks on Twitter. I'll let you know if I end up playing that.
And also, after the weigh-ins or before you make any of your plays, go to bestfightpicks.com to see what plays Daniel made. That's what I do each and every week, just to see how I'm going to win my money this time. So this is pretty damn exciting, in my opinion, that we are finally getting we're getting a title fight on UFC Fight Pass. I have been a UFC Fight Pass subscriber since they were like, hey man, do you want to be a Fight Pass subscriber? I was like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do that. So let's add to the excitement of getting a title fight on UFC streaming service by following Daniel Lethy on Twitter and getting some money back with his picks. Again, check him out on bestfightpicks.com. You can follow me on Twitter at FlyingMMA. Daniel, summarize all the plays that are going to win us big money this week.
Okay, so as I mentioned, I'm obviously waiting for the weigh-ins because I don't want to say these are more unreliable fighters, but I mean, we haven't seen many of these guys fight too often, so you know, you got to make sure that they make weight, that they don't look too drawn out, and that they look ready to go. You want to catch those pre-fight interviews and see where their mindset's at. And, you know, once you do that, and I assume that they make weight, I'm eyeing putting one unit on Lucas Sajewski, Alan Patrick, Noad Lahat, and possibly the under 2.5 rounds in the main event. All plus money. I don't think that there's any reason to, you know, play any favorites on this card. Maybe if you really want to, you can put Joanna Jędrzejczyk in an open parlay or something. But, you know, it's minus 700, minus 800. There's not much value in that. And, you know, I'm only looking for value on these cards. So like I said, Sajewski, Lahat, Patrick, and potentially the under.
I will, of course, follow you on each and every one of those picks. I'm not going to skimp on any of them because if you do skimp on one of those picks, you risk not winning all of the units that you're going to win. Now it's time for the counter move summaries. Want to go first and give us your counter move?
Sure. I got Noad Lahat, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Lucas Sajewski, Scott Askham, and Magomed Mustafayev.
and I reserve the right to change my counter move team up until the card starts when counter move will no longer let me change my team. But as of right now, I've got Dennis Seaver, Alan Omer, Joanna Joenjaychik, Taylor, Double Impact Lapolis, and Makwan, Mr. Finland, Americani. Time for the shout-outs, Daniel. What do you got?
All right. So, you know, there's so many people I want to thank, and I feel like every single time I always leave someone out. But first and foremost, you know, obviously all the listeners of the show, everyone that, you know, talks to us on Twitter, we really appreciate the support. I mean, we say it every single time, but it's the truth, man. I can't say it enough. So thank you guys so much. I'd like to thank my boy Dougie at California MMA, real cool dude. My boy, the MMA genius. Sam Reeves, you know, I love you, bro. Brian, flying Brian, the fucking man, thank you. The MMA analysis guys, the Cage Cash guys, James Lynch, and anyone that I left off, I'm really sorry, but I want to thank you now anyways. Go Paulo, Nick UFC, all these guys, thank you.
So I've got a couple of shout-outs. Thank you to all of those guys who you just listed. I love all those guys as well, especially you, Nick, with the MMA Junior. Check him out. He's doing great things. He's a really young guy. Check him out. I have to say, I made a counter move game for me, you, and 18 other listeners that made it to this point on the counter move. It's a private game, so you have to click the link to get into it. I leave it just for us. Hopefully, I won't get last again this week like I did last week. Another shout-out I want to give out is to my girlfriend. She told me that I needed to start this website and this podcast because I was talking her ear off about MMA. She's like, dude, why don't you go talk to somebody else about it? So I'm like, all right, man, I'm going to make a blog. I'm going to start a podcast. So that's why I'm here today, because of her. I need to thank Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of MMA. He raises affordable and healthy bulldogs and has been doing so for the last 30 years. He also supports this podcast. He supports a lot of MMA fighters. So go support him on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 and also on Instagram, Instagram.com/UniqueKennels. Why haven't you got your daily dose of cute yet? Go there to get that in right now. Thank you to the listeners, and we're out. Later, Daniel.
See you, Brian.
Namaste.